They told us that Josie was really sweet, that she was great with cats, and that she was leash trained. Well, shortly after we brought her home, we found out that some of these were only half truths.
If you've ever wanted a drug-free way to feel like you're on drugs, I recommend having a manic episode.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Laura Wexler.
And I'm Jessica Hinken.
And this week, Dog Days of Summer Part 2, Healing Companions. Two stories about the power of our best four-legged friends to help us when we need it.
That's how you feel about Biscuit.
Definitely.
So much so that Laura's husband got animal insurance, something that he absolutely
we canceled it.
Never mind.
We don't care anymore. He's too old. All right. Not a good investment. Just kidding. Okay. So this first story is from Elise Gallagher, who's a freelance editor and fiction writer. This is a classic story of who's helping who. Take a listen.
This story begins the way some modern love stories do. A meeting, a discovery online, a meeting in person, and love at first sight. Only, this isn't a story about a person. It's about a 20-pound dash hound dog named Josie. My scarf. In 2013, when my husband and I lived in Massachusetts with our two cats, we decided to adopt a dog. We found Josie online through an adoption agency, and they had rescued her from an animal hoarder who had 30 other dogs. They told us that Josie was really sweet, that she was great with cats, and that she was leash trained. Well, shortly after we brought her home, we found out that some of these were only half-truths. She was really sweet and cuddly and loved her belly rub, but if you got too close to her face or if she heard paper rustling, she'd get really scared. And anytime our cats got close to her or her bed, she would lunge across the room and snap at them, sometimes getting some fur. When we took her for a walk, she was comfortable having the leash attached to her collar, but anytime she saw another dog or person, she went from our sweet girl to this like vicious, snarling, lunging dog, like all she wanted to do was go attack that other dog. And at first I just thought it was because she was like in a new environment and she didn't know our neighborhood, but the behavior continued and I started to worry it was a permanent part of her nature. And it got to the point where walking her was such an ordeal, I didn't even want to do it anymore. We couldn't be outside for more than like 2 minutes before we saw another dog or person. She went crazy and I was like dragging her by the leash to try to get her back inside, and she was choking because she was pulling so hard. And then people started recognizing us and like crossing the street to go the other way, or sometimes they would just turn around and walk away. So honestly, I was really embarrassed, and I was also frustrated why Josie couldn't be like the other calm dogs in our neighborhood. So my husband and I hired a dog trainer for help, and she told us that Josie was fear reactive, which means that whenever she felt threatened, she acted in an aggressive way. And the dog trainer also noticed that Josie had an indentation on the top of her head that was probably from a dog bite. So I started to see Josie differently. She wasn't like an unruly, disobedient dog. She had 5 years of trauma and anxiety stored up in her from the time she spent with the animal hoarder. And I can only imagine that she probably had to rely on herself and protect herself from these other dogs. Anxiety was something that I could relate to. I've had anxiety and anxiety attacks since I was a kid. There's a lot of triggers for them, but back when I had Josie, one of my triggers, like Josie, was going for a walk by myself. The further away I got from my house, the more anxious I felt, and my heart would start racing. And I had this weird detached feeling, kind of like I was like floating and I wasn't grounded. So here I was, anxious me, anxious, fearful Josie, and I was wondering like how would we ever get to a place where we could actually go outside and go for a walk? But I had made a promise to Josie when I brought her home that I would protect her, and I had to be her advocate. Over the course of our training, very slowly, things started to change for me and Josie. It started with me pretending to be confident. When we saw another dog or person, I'd stand tall, like, you know, confident people do. And I would just tell Josie over and over again, it's okay, it's okay. All the while, my heart was racing with anxiety about how she'd act. But over time, just repeating that to myself and her, she started looking up to me when we went by another dog or a person for reassurance. And whenever I felt my anxiety coming on, I said, well, Josie can overcome this. I can overcome this too. So I'd take a deep breath, I'd hold her leash really tight, I'd pet her soft fur, and my heart would stop racing, and I would feel grounded again. And over time, Josie and I learned how to rely on each other and help each other overcome our anxieties, so that our walks went from these fearful, anxious experiences to one that were really enjoyable and an escape from stress. I loved walking Josie alone in the morning when everyone else was asleep. It felt like we were the only ones out there, seeing things that other people didn't see. We'd see fox run across the road, we'd see animal tracks in the snow, and we saw so many beautiful sunrises together. Over the course of our 10 years, Josie and I took a lot of walks. We also moved back to Maryland. My husband and I had two kids, and you can imagine that it brought its own set of challenges and anxieties. In the middle of the night, when I was pacing the hallway with a newborn baby, Josie was next to me. When I was sitting on the rug with an unruly toddler who refused to sleep, Josie was in my lap, and just the weight of her head against my leg let me know that everything was going to be okay. But as our lives got busier, Josie started to slow down, especially when she turned 15. First she lost her hearing, then she lost her eyesight, then she became incontinent and was in a diaper like my toddler. And my husband and I tried everything we could to ease her pain and her aging, but it got to the point where she couldn't really walk anymore and she didn't even want to be outside. At the time, I was reading a book by Stephen King called Fairy Tale, where a young boy takes his senior aging dog, Radar, to another world, and he battles monsters and giants to put his dog on a sundial that turns back years on his dog's life to make the dog younger again. And as I was reading this story crying, all I could think about was how I wanted to do this for Josie. I wanted to put her on the sundial and get those years back. But I wasn't in a fairy tale. I was in reality. And once again, I had to be Josie's advocate, but in a much harder way. My husband and I made the difficult decision to put Josie down because she just couldn't live her life the way she deserved to. After we lost Josie, I didn't think I could find another dog that I could love again or bond with the way I did with her. But as love does, I decided to give it another go. For a few months, I filled out applications online with rescue agencies, and every time I thought we got close to finding a dog, someone else adopted it. I was about to give up, but I went to Josie's urn on our bookcase, and I said, Josie, can you help us find another dog who needs a home just like you did? Within a week, we brought our four-month-old lab mix Luna puppy home with us. Luna follows me step by step through the house. She's constantly bumping her nose against my leg. And when things get crazy, as it does when you have two little kids, Luna gives me this intense look, and she comes up and she puts her nose right in front of my mouth like she's saying, I got you, Mom. And everything feels okay again. And just like I did with Josie, I walk Luna down our road, only this time we can go as far as we want to without any anxiety. Thank you.
I love this story. She does an incredible job of really taking her time and explaining
anxiety.
Yeah, in a way that is like, yes, that's exactly how it is. And then just the steps, the baby steps that are needed to try to overcome.
Yeah. We're going to take a break before we hear our next dog story.
Just as a warning, if you're feeling a little bit sad, I mean, it's a very bittersweet, lovely, amazing story, but it can be a little bit of a sad story. So if you want a little bit of a cry, continue to listen. If you want to, you know, wait until you're ready to have a good cry, just like, you know, bookmark this story. Okay, so this next story is by Phuong Nguyen, and she and her family emigrated from Vietnam as humanitarian refugees when she was 7. So this is her story about falling in love with a four-legged friend and the reciprocity that they had in their relationship. Take a listen.
In Vietnam in the 90s, people didn't really have companion animals. They had guard dogs. And for some light afternoon entertainment, one of my neighbors set his guard dog on my little brother and me when I'm 5. And I remember running and screaming and crying. And ever since then, I've been afraid of dogs and ashamed of that fear for just as long. So fast forward 18 years, I'm 23. I've moved to Hong Kong to live with my boyfriend of 2 years. And we live in a small apartment in Yang Shu Wan, which is a village of about 6,000, about a 20-minute ferry ride away from Hong Kong, and 7 million people. And after a few months, my life in Hong Kong has become difficult. I have basically no friends. My work situation is kind of dicey because I don't have a work visa, and I'm working anyway. And my relationship with my boyfriend is falling apart. And we fight all the time, and he makes me feel small and voiceless. And growing up, I never felt like I had a voice growing up with a bipolar, alcoholic, abusive dad and a narcissistic, manipulative mom who made me feel like I didn't matter. And she also told me that if people knew how I really was, they wouldn't like me. So, yes, I know, not the greatest mom, right? So I'm going around Hong Kong with all these feelings, and on the walk home from the ferry, I stop by the local animal shelter, and I see a pen out front, and I hear some squeaking, and I look in, and it's a literal pile of puppies, right? These 8-week-old pot-bellied puppies, and the shelter manager says that they're looking for some fosters, and asks me if I'm interested. If you've ever encountered 8-week-old puppies, you understand they're practically impossible to say no to. So by that evening, I'm fostering one of these puppies. I name him Bruce, like Bruce Lee. And so on one of the days that I'm dropping him off at the shelter for the day to go to work, the shelter manager points to a corner, and there in the corner, it's Bruce's little brother. And she says, this puppy needs some extra attention because he's not making any eye contact. He's not interacting with anybody. They're worried he's not going to get adopted. In the corner, I see this little puppy with his legs splayed out and his belly billowing over like a little Buddha. And next to him, about a foot high off the ground, is a 1-foot line streak of what can only be diarrhea. Okay? And I didn't want to take him at first because I knew that meant that I had to give up Bruce. But after some convincing, I take him home. I name him Barry, but I call him Squirt Butt for obvious reasons. Yeah. And Barry comes into my life at this point when I really needed somebody to love me truly and deeply and unconditionally. And he does. We become a unit. Like, he becomes the center of my universe, and I become the center of his universe. And he becomes so attuned to my emotions that he knows when I'm upset before I even know that I'm upset. So after a string of bad fights, I break up with my boyfriend, and I decide to move back to the U.S. And we were going to go from 60-degree weather in Hong Kong to 19 below with the wind chill. So I had to find something for Barry to wear. And the only thing I could find was this small black fur-lined hooded coat that said in big red letters on the back, America, number one dog, USA. Yeah. Yeah. And that's what he wore. And together, it was just me and Barry for the next few years. It was dog and girl against the world. Yeah. And but our adventures weren't over after our international move. Bear grows up to be a 54-pound lab chow mix with Dorito ears that flippity-flopped wherever he went, and a curly tail with a paintbrush tip, and itty-bitty teeth that make you ask, why are they even four when you look at them? And he jumps over puddles, and he cleans himself like a cat, and best of all, he smells like sunshine, like legit smells like sunshine. So our travels aren't over, right? When I'm 27, I decide to stick all my crap in an SUV that I rented and drive the 26 hours to DC from Colorado with a one-hour nap in between. Now, I guess you are already noticing this, but looking back, I realized that some of the issues that my parents had, I also inherited, and that move was probably fueled by a hypomanic episode. Before I got electroconvulsive therapy, or ECT, I'd get hypomanic episodes. And if you've ever wanted a drug-free way to feel like you're on drugs, I recommend having a manic episode, right? I was confident and outgoing and witty and charming. At least that's what it seemed like to me. And what follows, though, from all of these hypomanic episodes is a deep depression. So I remember sitting on the bus from the Tacoma Park Metro, feeling just overcome with anxiety, my stomach turning inside out over and over and over again. And all I could do was focus on taking my next deep breath. And sometimes even that felt impossible. But through it all, there was Barry. And just like he supported me through all my journeys, he was going to support me through this journey. And so on my worst days, I'd give Barry some scritches on the head, and he would give me some kisses. And it didn't make the anxiety or depression go away, but it did help me take my next breath. And on some days, depression got so bad that I would think of ending it. But then I would think of who would take care of Barry. I couldn't rely on my family. All my friends were back in Colorado. And so if it weren't for Barry, I probably wouldn't be here today. And he saved me. And it weren't for Barry. Sorry. Yeah. So, and some days the only reason I got out of bed was because I had to take Barry for a walk. And on some days, when my depression got so bad that I couldn't work, Barry would hop on my bed and curl up next to me and let his body go limp and let me rotate and contort his body so that his face and jowly neck were on my face. I was being smothered by his fur. And this brought me flashes of joy, and they were the only things that could really slice through the overwhelming sadness that I was feeling. So after many years of searching for the right treatment, my life improves and my health improves, and I meet a wonderful man named Brian, and we get married and eventually move to Baltimore. And Barry and I would have 10 years together with lots of cuddles and hikes and camping trips. And when he gets a brain tumor at age 13, it's time for me to return the good care that he took of me when I was depressed. In the last month of Barry's life, he couldn't make it up the stairs to the second floor bedroom, so we took all the blankets down and made a nest in the living room and slept with him there. And at 1:30 a.m., On Christmas morning, he lets out the saddest, most painful cry I've ever heard him make. And he passes away at 2:20 a.m. on Christmas morning 2 years ago. The day that I had to let him go was one of the worst days of my life. And after he died, my husband and I, we sit in the nest that we made with Barry in the living room for a week, drinking and crying and drinking. Some people sit Shiva after death. Well, we drank Shiva. Yeah. On the one-year anniversary of Barry's death, we take his ashes up to a hike in Shenandoah National Park, and we spread his ashes. And in that moment, I feel a sense of emptiness and fullness. And I thank Barry for coming into my life, for making me feel loved and accepted in a way that I'd never felt before. And for being my best friend, for teaching me to love with my whole heart, for giving me so many moments of pure joy. And although he's not physically here with me any longer, the sense of love and acceptance that he gave me is mine forever. Thank you.
That was a hard story for a brewery.
Especially the people who just showed up, because it was a partnership show that we had with the SPCA.
Yeah.
So, you know, we had these adorable kittens for adoption that were there, and the world's most anxious dog for adoption, which, like, you know, a brewery is so echoey.
Yeah.
This dog was a poodle, so already, you know, we're talking anxious. And then it had a cone. Poor thing. You could tell it was looking for a way out. Like, it just wanted nothing to do with people or noises. Anyway, point is, you have lots of people drinking beer and then listening to Foong's incredibly wonderfully told but sad story. But so grateful to her for sharing that.
Yeah. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week with more stories from The Stoop. We want to thank Maureen Harvey for producing the podcast, and check us out at stoopstorytelling.com. We've got all of our stories on there and upcoming shows and workshops. We'll see you soon.